Welcome to Idle Red Hands, a podcast from Japan about gaming and gamer life. And welcome to Idle Red Hands. I'm Chris.
I'm Wayne.
I'm Lyle.
Yeah, we have some big news. We're on Twitter now.
Yay!
All right, that's pretty lackluster, but hopefully the listeners will be more enthused than Chris. But
I was pretty enthused. That was my yay.
Oh, all right, I've heard you yell louder than that.
I'm trying to so keep the it listeners. Down, you know.
Yeah, so you can follow us at Idle Red Hands. It's all one word.
Because Twitter doesn't allow spaces.
Yeah, Twitter doesn't allow spaces. We put up notifications when episodes go up, and also when they go up on DriveThruRPG. Notes to stuff that didn't make it into the episode, but we still wanted to talk about.
Random thoughts, things like that.
Teasers for upcoming episodes.
Yep, people who've been following us know that we have a Marble episode coming up.
That's true.
Yes, we do.
Then we barely qualify for people.
All right, you know.
Number of followers.
Again, it's plural. It's plural. There are followers. Oh, it's like that contest entry we did. Okay, so you have a 100% chance of winning. All right. You weren't supposed to tell them that.
But. All right. And we just recently played the game Descent, the first edition, in time for second edition that's coming up.
Yeah. On the ball as usual.
Maybe we can explain. Yeah. What is Descent people who don't know the game?
Descent is a Fantasy Flight board game that I guess kind of represents replicates a dungeon crawl, where all the players control a hero and one player is kind of like the game master. They call it the Overlord, and the Overlord controls all the monsters on the board, and the other players have heroes that kind of go into a dungeon and complete some kind of quest.
Yeah, it's very reminiscent to Hero Quest.
Yeah, no, yeah, I had Hero Quest when I was a kid too. So it was Hero Quest. It was similar to Hero Quest, but
for the third time.
Yeah, all right, you know what? All right, so sorry.
If I had to compare it to a game, it would be Hero Quest.
All right, not Warhammer Fantasy Quest. All right. So it's similar to that game, which must not be mentioned, but during the adventure, the players also have the option of kind of leaving the dungeon and going to town to complete kind of town-related actions, such as buying, pretty much all you can do is buy stuff, but I guess you can kind of heal up too.
And kind of trade stuff between the characters, whatever they picked up.
I really liked that, and looking at the dungeon when I was setting things up, I guess I kind of realized that you're not supposed to, or at least I think, you're not supposed to try and get through the dungeon in one go. Like, you are going to have to stop and go back to town and resupply.
Well, I can't
and then
imagine
go back
having
to the
been able to do that. I think it looked like it was pretty obvious that it was set up that way, because each different kind of section of the dungeon we went through had its own little town portal.
Yeah, I think that was just so you could kind of come back and not have to start all the way from the beginning again when there's not going to be stuff to do there.
Yeah.
But
yeah, like save point in a video game.
Yeah, it's kind of like a save point.
Yeah, I think the mechanics were a little bit clunky when you went back to town, because you still had to follow the same basic kind of combat turn. So, for example, everything like going shopping and trading things, they cost movement points, so you still have to declare your turn as movement points and then spend the movement points in order. And when it gets to like people trading things back and forth, it got a little bit confusing at once.
Yeah, I think that was, well, we should probably back up a bit, is we have a person who's kind of like the game master or the controller of the game or controller of all the monsters.
The Overlord. And
called the Overlord. Or.
If you want to add some emphasis though.
And like all the players get a turn, and the Overlord gets a turn after all the players have had a turn. And in the Overlord's turn, they get like threats. And like those threats are like cards that could summon more monsters or could have traps, as well as the power to trigger traps and things like that. So if the players are just going to go to the town, like how much you do in the town could, I mean, if you keep trading or buying things, the players are getting more powerful. So you kind of need a balance that the longer you're in the town, the more powerful the Overlord is getting, because they're still getting all of these extra turns.
It got a little bit fiddly with just counting out the movement points, but not to say that it really took that much away from the game. I still had a great time, especially when we defeated the boss monster.
Yeah, even though as I overloaded and I lost, I still laughed so hard I couldn't breathe at the end of that game.
Yeah.
It was pretty funny.
The boss monster took one hit and went down.
Yeah, well, you guys were, like, tooled up with, like, absolutely everything in the weapon decks. I mean, your character, Chris, was just like a freaking chainsaw.
It was fantastic.
Yeah, the final boss monster took one step forward and you're like, and I get a free hit on him because I'm doing a guard action. Okay, roll your dice. And he's dead. All right. Good job, everybody.
Many times over.
Yeah, many times over. Yeah, just like, like a freaking lawnmower.
Yeah.
So you pick your character, or I guess you could randomly draw your characters that you're going to play. And then you also randomly get skills.
Right.
And I think what happened in our game is some of the skills are much better than others, and some of them combine to make some pretty awesome effects.
Yeah.
And it just so happened that Chris and I were both playing two characters, and both of Chris's characters seemed to get the ultimate combinations of skills.
Yeah.
Whereas I think mine characters were more balanced. Each one had a really good skill.
I love
skill.
That. My characters were more balanced. Chris was
random.
Like uber killing.
Yeah, yeah.
That's why I won.
Yeah, I know what you're saying, though. Sorry, I didn't cut you off.
So each of my characters had a really decent skill, and then they had two other skills that were okay. And I think that's what the game kind of relies on, is that random will balance out the minor skills and the major skills, because there's no point buy or anything.
Mm, right.
But you could conceivably draw two or three awesome skills, and then your character is very much tooled up.
Yeah, and I did like that one. The one character who killed the boss in the one fight, he had two skills each gave him +2 damage. So that's +4, and a lot of the monsters were only about 4 life, so it was almost auto-kill from the beginning.
Yeah, and your other character had, like, two skills that increased its range, so you never needed to count range when you used a ranged attack.
Some of the dice allowed you to give damage or range, so I could ignore the range the whole time and just do damage.
The dice was very interesting.
Yeah, I agree.
There's different colored dice, and weapons would do damage or range based on a color combination. So you would choose if it was, let's say, red, yellow and green, then you would roll those dice and then you would count what was on there. And there's different codes. I thought it was very easy to follow.
Yeah, it's really cool. Like the red was very heavy on damage, but it didn't have any range on it, whereas yellow was mostly range and didn't have any damage. So as you'd expect, a bow would have a yellow die on it and an axe would have a red die.
Generally, I kind of know what the dice are now, but I haven't like really scrutinized the faces. One of the things, like after I got it, I found out they were doing a second edition. Like I went to the Fantasy Flight website and looked at what supposedly like the perks of second edition were. And they said something like easier to read or simpler combat.
Hmm.
And like after playing, I'm like, well, yeah, it looks like a tiny bit tricky at first just because like you have so many symbols on like a die face. But then once you understand what they are, once you've gone through like two turns of combat, it is really easy and really fast to count up and kind of figure out what's happening.
Yeah.
So I'm curious to know what they did to quote unquote simplify it. Since
I have
it
seen that criticism in reviews is
really
is that Descent, the combat dice were a bit difficult, but I found it quite easy.
Yeah, it didn't bother me at all.
Yeah. Pretty intuitive. Some of the criticisms were there were some rules where it was unclear, and I think one of those things was like when we go to the town, can you run in town and increase your movement?
Yeah.
It is a board game, so it's not going to be as flexible as like a real role-playing game.
Mm-hmm.
So that's not to say it again, but like the first time you guys went to town, I said, okay, it's kind of like a role-playing game. You guys are safe and you can kind of do whatever you want, but the rules are kind of their board game rules, right?
Yeah.
And like one of the rules we found out after we played is players can't trade money with each other.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something that you guys were doing, but it seems kind of weird. I mean, you guys are working together, so why shouldn't you be able to pool your resources and kind of
buy
stuff?
Makes sense. Like, by pooling our resources, we got some of the spiffiest weapons and armors and things like that.
The killiest sword ever. And you're like, oh, great, give that to me, because I've got, like, these skills that are
excellent.
Making me, like...
I finally got the pull chain on this lawnmower.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it was, I don't know, I really, really enjoyed it,
even
though it took a lot longer to play than we thought it would, and not in a bad way, just kind of like when we finished the adventure, we just kind of looked at the clock and said, whoa, it's that late already?
Yeah.
I think it took us 5 hours.
I think so.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But like, I think at the end of 5 hours, I was ready to finish, but I mean, the whole time I had a good day.
Yeah, he's like, I'm glad that guy died, because I was done.
Well, I remember around the 3 hour or so mark, just thinking like, wow, I could just play this all day.
Mm.
And around the five part, like, you know, it's just, we'd been playing for a while, so.
I could play this for a very short day.
Yeah.
What'd you think of it as either a substitute for a role-playing game or as a gateway to a role-playing game?
Gateway, I think, very good because you have the different characters and you get to get different skills and weapons. So you kind of get the feeling of building a character and they advance as you play.
Yeah.
So I think it's a good opening into that world. But as far as a substitute for, I don't think so because there isn't role-playing. So anyone who wants to specifically do a role-playing game, this isn't it. This is combat on a board.
Yeah, just to kind of, I guess, clarify or ask kind of like a question. Like, yeah, okay, you look at D&D 4th edition, and it is a role-playing game, but there, apart from skill challenges, are there really any mechanics for role-playing? I would kind of argue not.
You're saying put role-playing into Descent.
Yeah, I'm kind of saying because there are no rules for role-playing, but that's not going to prevent you from kind of putting a layer on top of it.
You could also say do that with poker. I mean,
I guess you could. What character are you? I'm the Five of Clubs. Okay.
Could you see yourself as the Overlord acting as one of the Beastmen, you know, parlaying with the characters? Because I think that's a big difference between a role-playing game and a board game is, even if the game doesn't have a lot of rules to facilitate role-playing, the idea in it, there's a lot of opportunities in the adventure to go outside of the dungeon or go outside of the combat and interact with what we call non-player characters, NPCs.
You might say that, but remember, part of the balance of the game was that while you were in town, you had very limited and specific actions. I'm talking about Descent.
And I'm talking about role-playing games.
Oh, yeah, what Lyle's saying is...
Whereas Descent, and I agree with you, is like, in the town, there's no characters in there.
Yeah.
Like, you don't meet, like, the innkeeper, you don't meet a merchant. So where would you do the role-playing?
Exactly. Like, it tries to flavor it. It gives you box text to read, you know, in this craggy dungeon, you see a monster, something like that. But, so, a gateway, yes, but not a replacement for a role-playing game.
I think it is a great gateway because... especially for like a new GM, is playing the Overlord, I think would get somebody very comfortable in running a combat, which is probably the most difficult thing in being a game master.
Can I just interrupt? It would get them very comfortable in losing a combat. If you have like my luck with those dice, you're just like, I couldn't get the monsters on the board fast enough before you just like wipe them all off.
Yeah. You could also ask that the players play in character or something, but again, it's still...
I swing my sword recklessly at you!
Well, like for example, when you say, you know, go over there and move behind that wall and I'll move up into that, you could do that, but it's still only just kind of piling it on top of what's just a game with the mechanics bare in the open.
So yeah, as a gateway game, yeah, I definitely agree. Coming from like role-playing games and then playing this, I enjoyed it because it was fun to just kick back, not worry about a story, and to actually attempt to try and kill you guys. You know, it was kind of fun to actually play the antagonist GM where it kind of didn't really matter, you know? I'm like, no, my goal here is to try and wipe the floor with you guys. I didn't achieve it, but it was still fun to try and to just go for that. Whereas, you know, you do that in a regular role-playing game and you lose friends really fast if you do that. Like, dude, you just killed me. It's like,
oh. Yeah, because people don't invest any time in like a card that they just drew before you started playing Descent.
Yeah.
And also if he dies, he just respawns. So.
Yeah. And I'm back. Oh, well.
Cool.
But I really enjoyed that.
Yeah, definitely a fun game.
It was good.
So today we're going to talk about bankers for our next creature feature.
We went from ultra-exciting Descent to just as exciting bankers, right?
Yeah.
And if you don't believe us, stay tuned.
Greed is good.
This is true.
We're just stealing your intros, aren't we?
Yeah. Well, I had something about Occupy Wall Street. I guess that's gone. There was a clever you are the 1%, but now it's gone now.
So we're occupying this mic? No, okay. I'm not even going to try.
You guys kind of took my mojo.
Too bad. The only one in the room wearing a tie, so.
Nah, I came from work.
You lie. You wear a tie every day.
All right. Okay. I'm just going to stare angrily at my notes and hopefully you guys can...
Dude, shut up! I stopped!
I'm having a great time here.
All right, so what do we mean by bankers? Well, people who work in a bank, obviously. But not tellers. So we're looking at bankers, you know, people who keep or loan money for a fee and charge interest. Or, as we get later on, we'll find out that some people don't charge interest or charge a fee. Or they.
Sorry, I was glad it's not really that narrow of a definition. People who charge interest and people who don't.
All right.
Go on.
Types of bankers, as you can apply them to a game. We'll also be looking at currencies and the different what you can do with currency, as well as different types of currency.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So the first banker type of bankers is the controller, and we look at somebody like we were looking at like Gordon Gekko, where they see that like they can see money as a way to control the environment around them.
Mm-hmm. One of the guys I saw that kind of fit into that was Rothschild, the guy who pretty much owned England during the Napoleonic era.
And he had a pretty good quote, didn't he?
Yeah. What was it? It was give me control of a nation's money, and I care not who makes her laws.
Hmm.
And I saw another version of it that's followed up with, and I control her money. But there's all those big conspiracy theories about how evil the Fed is, but he's kind of, the Rothschild family is kind of at the center of those the big conspiracy theories, saying that they control the World Bank, so they're an Illuminati association. There's even stories about how, well, this isn't the story, this is real. He funded the England's venture into the Napoleonic Wars. That was, he gave the country the ability to do that. There's stories about how his messengers gave him the information about the results of the Battle of Waterloo before the British royalty knew, and he was able to use that to his advantage to make lots and lots of money. Yeah, pretty scary guy.
I actually came up with like a fictional example when I was thinking this. I was thinking of Peter Baelish from Game of Thrones. He didn't only use money, he also used favors or influence.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he kind of used, I guess, money and favors to kind of get into a position of power.
And gain influence.
Yes, yeah. Thank you. All right.
Sorry.
Right. One thing about the controller, yeah, it's not necessarily money for money's sake. Mm-hmm. So Peter Baelish is a good example because for
Thank
him
you
it was
for
a...
helping me.
Sorry. Thanks for spitting in my face for that. So he saw, of course, he had a low status.
Mm-hmm.
So he saw money as a way to achieve a high status and the other things that he wanted in life.
For him, it was never about the money. It was about the power. The influence.
Yeah, it's a means to an end.
Mm-hmm.
And that's like the controller. Another type of, what we'll call it, banker in quotes, who sees money as a means to an end is the destroyer. And this is one of the things that sparked the idea for this episode, mm-hmm. is I read, maybe it's a tenuous link, but whatever. It is a link. It is the novel, the Horus Heresy novel, Nemesis. And that's about the different assassins in the Warhammer 40K world. And one of the assassin temples is the Vanus Temple.
Mm-hmm.
And they control information. And you're wondering, well, how is that person an assassin? And one of the examples he gives is what he did is he manipulated all the these financial records. And it's not spoiling the book, by the way. He was just kind of setting up who he was. He manipulated all of these financial records to make it look like somebody was stealing money from his partners.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, the partners killed them. So that is somebody who's using money to destroy. You would be looking at, like, if somebody's an estranged husband or something, but also a banker, then they might use the money to destroy their wife,
yeah.
or get revenge. Maybe their whole motivation in life was just to get a lot of power so they can take it out on the bully in high school, buy the company that he works in, destroy the company.
Yeah. Yeah. I think my first thought when I saw this was Andy Dufresne from Shawshank Redemption. I brought down the guard and the warden at the end, yeah.
That's a good one. So basically, they don't want to use the money. The money's just like a tool to bring the downfall of someone else.
Yeah.
Now, you also look at leverage. Now, leverage, of course, is about people. You know, we reference that show a lot.
I love the show. I watch it all the time.
But of course, they're the good guys. But if you look at what they're actually doing, a lot of times they're using money to destroy somebody who, of course, using the antagonist's own greed against themselves. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that also is.
If you use the leverage example, sorry to interrupt. If you use the leverage example, could you say that like the targets they go after, would they kind of be the destroyer? Because usually, correct me if I'm wrong, Chris, usually they're going after kind of corrupt people or people who have done kind of questionable things. You know, they're kind of like the good guys.
Oh, yeah, that's a formula of the show. Someone who's been hurt by an evil banker or lawyer or corporate executive or something like that.
So the antagonist in this case could be kind of seen as like the destroyer, usually.
Destroying the destroyer, kind of a Robin Hood thing.
Right, which leads into our next role. Oh, I tip my hat to you, sir.
I've been practicing.
He's going to ask for that lead back with interest. Oh.
No. Robin Hood, of course, a classic example would be Robin Hood.
Which is why we named the category Robin Hood, perhaps.
Yeah, but we're looking at people that are... of course, redistributing wealth.
Mm.
We also look at like real life examples such as microfinancing, where somebody who like might lend like $20 here, $50 there to somebody who's trying to start like a micro business in place like India or Bangladesh. And they're really helping the community or helping like a war widow start a new business.
I think the important part there is that they're not getting any benefit really from it other than the kind of the good of the community.
Yeah.
Like they're not really looking for a massive return on this business, which is why you kind of named it appropriately Robin Hood.
Nice bankers.
Right. And you take something like the Bank of America, which is a lot of people think is like the big evil faceless corporation. But that actually started by a guy named Amadeo Giannini. Apologies to our Italian listeners. But he actually started it because foreigners and immigrants, especially like Italian immigrants, couldn't get loans from banks. So he started a bank and started lending it out to other immigrants in the San Francisco area.
Yeah.
And then he was actually played a pretty big role in helping to rebuild San Francisco because he was able to save his money from the fires.
Yeah, that was kind of interesting. The thing we read, it's like after the fire, like the banks couldn't open their vaults because that would destroy the money for some reason. I guess, like, what, they had to let the money cool down for some reason? I don't know. Like, that's what they said. But because he kept the money, like, out of the city, he was kind of the only bank that was able to actually give people money during that time to actually kind of invest in, in the rebuilding.
Like, carting it out on horseback to and from his house. I really like the part where his bank was at one point a board set across two barrels and he conducted loans by handshake.
Our final role is the faithful. And this was the other came from the other inspiration, the Templars, who pretty much invented modern banking.
Yeah.
And the idea, you know, when people go on pilgrimages or go to the Holy Land, they would deposit money in a temple, like a Templar temple, because the Templars were so reliable or trustworthy because they were men of God. And then they would get like a note, and then they could go, when they went to Jerusalem, they could go to the temple there and they could withdraw that, the equivalent amount of funds.
Yep. Didn't they also say that people who went off on the Crusades would kind of entrust their lands and businesses to the Templars as well while they were gone?
Yep, that's one way the Templars actually made money.
Yeah.
But Wayne, you had another spin on the faithful.
Yeah, because the original idea you had for faithful was kind of like people who worshipped at the altar of money. And I was trying to think of examples of that. And then we watched the movie Boiler Room. And I said, oh, okay, that's a pretty good example, because here are guys who are making money. They're not really out to hurt people, even though that is an effect of what they do. But here are these people kind of essentially worshiping at the altar of money. They're making money because that's kind of what they've been told to do, and that's what they want to do. But it's like they almost really don't know what to do with it then after they get it.
You see that with some of the CEOs of mega corporations these days. I mean, people who have billions upon billions of dollars, there's no way they could spend it all, but they want more.
Yeah, I think what separates like the Boiler Room faithful from the controller, like a Rothschild controller, is they don't really want to do anything with the money other than buy things. They don't necessarily want to control their environment. They don't want to necessarily hurt anybody, although they might hurt somebody to achieve the end. So there it's flipped.
Mm-hmm.
Everything else is a means to the end of money.
Yeah. Very sociopathic.
I say it's very shallow. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's very underdeveloped, I suppose. But you can see a lot of, people were talking about Shadowrun before, and it's like, what's the motivation in the game? A lot of times in motivation in the game of Shadowrun is you break the law to get money.
Mm-hmm.
Now you can do it for other things, but of course these people aren't bankers.
Yeah.
Yeah, they'll just spend it as soon as they get it. Yeah.
But it's the same idea. If you had somebody who was obsessed with money, then everything else is just an obstacle to get that, or the faithful. Or on the flip side, you can have somebody like a Templar where they just have faith, and part of it is
collecting money or holding money for people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Faith actually makes people trust them.
Right, but I was also thinking of the New Wave Requiem, because in that one, since it's kind of based on the 80s, they had greed as like a virtue. And that kind of made me think of like the faithful as well for this example, because I guess it could bleed over into other things like the destroyer or the controller, because the greed can kind of lead you to covet other things. But it is kind of like that 80s corporate lifestyle where you're just kind of, you want to earn money and that's kind of what you want to do.
Mm. We were looking at, I think it's a new game, Corporation. Just brief background, it's set in the future, and it's the mega corporation dystopia. And they have these different corporations, and one of them, the Eurasian Corporation, I believe, that's what their thing is. It's all about just making money.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas other corporations, such as, I believe, the Western Federation, it's all about controlling the people, because not only do they want to control the finances, they want to control how people think.
Mm-hmm.
I don't believe there's an example of a Robin Hood in this dystopia.
Well, that's why it's dystopia.
Okay, so we've set up some roles of bankers. Some types of bankers. So now we'll look at how you can use them in a game.
Mm-hmm.
And one example is if you look at I think it would help if we look at different types of currency and talk about that a bit. And if you look at like the gold standard, what's a classic fantasy creature that we associate with gold?
Oh, dragons.
You did not see me pitching that to you?
No, actually,
you remember that idea you had on dragons that you wanted to talk about?
Yeah, I didn't expect
it. Did you see Lyle Semaphore in the corner over there?
I can't see him because he's right next to me.
Can you put the flags down?
No, I actually thought of dragons. And when I was writing out kind of like a note to keep myself on track, you know, describing banks, I said, okay, banks don't just sit on money, you know, like a dragon on a hoard of treasure, which kind of led me think, hey, that would actually be pretty cool in the a fantasy setting if dragons were kind of the banks.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you could go to a dragon, and if you were nice, he would write out a letter, almost like the Templar for you.
An enormous letter.
Yeah, an enormous letter. Or if he polymorphed into a human, you know, small letter, and then you could travel anywhere in the world and, you know, hand this letter in and...
To another dragon?
Yeah, to another dragon and collect gold.
Yeah. Hmm. There's a lot of things you can do with that. One thing is you could actually make it like a gold standard of currency. Mm-hmm. So the kingdom or kingdoms, perhaps use a paper script or a debased coin, mm-hmm. because it's all backed by the gold kept by these dragons. So they're almost... They're like a Federal Reserve, or they're like a Fort Knox.
And yeah. What better thing to protect gold than a dragon?
Right.
I really like the idea, because, I mean, I've seen fantasy stories with where the dragon is the king or the ruler of some country, but it'd be cool if he wasn't the king. He's where the real power is, with the money.
And then there'd be like a mystery, like why, let's say if the dragons are acting in a benevolent fashion, mm-hmm. why are they being so benevolent?
Yeah.
Are they necessarily good dragons? I mean, they could be the ultimate controllers. They just make the kingdoms more and more dependent on them, and mm-hmm. then they kind of pull the rug. Now they have worthless script or yeah. worthless currency. And now, so, okay, how about we just control everything now?
Yeah.
Okay, well, I'd rather eat than...
Absolutely.
Yeah, I don't care who the king is.
Mm. Yeah, I think you said it before, Lyle. What if some adventurers went to slay the dragon? And yeah. Then by doing that, they brought down the country's currency.
Yeah.
Whoops.
Yeah.
And then Wayne and I were talking prior to the episode, and he was saying if the dragon was acting as like a money lender, like a traditional bank, and the town is in danger of defaulting on their loan, then they could hire a band of adventurers to go kill the dragon, yeah. kill the banker.
Yeah. Great, we don't have to repay our loan. It's like, what? Whoa. Yeah, to tie back.
Dragon collection agency, that's got to be nasty.
Yeah, exactly. That's why I thought it was kind of cool, because who's going to default on a loan when it's a dragon right. at the other end, you know? It's like, tell them we're not home.
We got a letter from the bank. From the bank!
But what are some other currencies, though, that you can use?
Well, there's favors, reading off of your list.
Yeah. You all had your own list.
I do. My list is in my head.
Yeah.
This is true.
This is true. Yeah, and playing on the interest thing. So you do a favor for somebody. Maybe that's your business. You're in the business of doing favors. You see a lot that in like a mafia movie or...
Yeah.
Something, well, I'll do this favor for you, and in time I may ask you for a favor. Mm-hmm. But if you apply kind of the bankler concept or with interest concept, is you know whatever favor you ask of that person, they're going to ask for a favor with interest applied on it. And if you look at something like compound interest, mm-hmm. where it keeps growing every year, if it's annual compounded annually, then, you know, you could wait and wait and wait, and, you know, a decade or two decades pass, but it's grown substantially, the favor that they're going to ask. Mm-hmm. Or they can ask for a favor almost immediately, and it's a very small increase on what you've done.
You know, it's always that scene in, like, movies where, you know, the guy walks in and he's like, no, you promised me something, and you said that one day I would have to repay you. Today is that day. But thinking about the favor economy, that kind of made me think of Eclipse Phase, even though Eclipse Phase is kind of, well, not utopian, but the way it works, it's
I think... Yeah, I think it'd be the opposite of
yeah,
utopian.
Yeah, it's quite dystopian, actually.
Well, okay, I guess maybe, but I was thinking in terms of at least the favors, right? They kind of have a favor mechanic built in.
You mean the rep-based economy?
Yeah, the reputation-based economy, where what you do is you kind of put a request out on the mesh and just kind of like send it out asking for favors or equipment or things you need. And people respond to you, and, you know, that's how you find equipment in the outer systems where they don't use money.
Yeah.
But the idea is, it's almost like one of, like, the torrent sharing sites, where if you ask for too many favors in too short a time, or the favors are too big, you kind of, your reputation starts to go down because you're seen as a leech, and then it's more difficult to get things. Or the reason I said it was kind of utopian is that you aren't charged interest on anything. It's just kind of a straight sort of one-for-one barter. You know, you do kind of these favors, and that means you'll eventually have to do favors, but the value of the favor is essentially the same.
Yeah, I spent a bit of time thinking about how that whole system works, and it doesn't. The way that you repay a person, you give them reputation or credit, there is no kind of standard as to how much credit or what the credit is worth. So I think that actually bringing a banker kind of organization into Eclipse Phase might be a good way to handle that.
Well, I think
so what Chris is saying is he's you have a game mechanic and you have kind of the idea within the game
right.
world. And Chris is saying a banking or some sort of banker would be a nice bridge between that. Because who is applying that value within the game world? You could say, well, it's just kind of known, kind of like in a barter system.
There's no way that you could keep like the big corporations from using that. Like all your employees give me lots of
well,
rep.
Not to draw on the setting. That's why I said the outer system. The outer system is sort of the anarchist area where people just agree on do whatever. The corporations don't use that.
We could debate about it later, but it still doesn't work.
Fine. Oh, you just had to throw that in there, didn't you?
In that case, though, I think kind of an organization that would mitigate what certain favors are worth and has a way of kind of transmitting them between people, I think that would work pretty well in that system.
If you're worried about like a bank, disrupting this utopia, then you could apply something like the faithful role, like a Templar. They're just very trustworthy. Mm-hmm. Like people trust them, and that's how they're able to establish that kind of system. They appear as some sort of neutral thing. I'm thinking about like Hyperion mm-hmm. recently, and they have the AIs kind of, they kind of run the web, and they seem to be quite benevolent, but they could easily remove that control or completely crash the web and completely destroy what they call that the hegemony, which is their empire, like the human empire. So, you know, you have that kind of like third party that everybody seems to trust for whatever reason, mm-hmm. like the Templars or these AIs, and that can kind of bring these corporations and these anarchists together because they're not. Is that making sense?
Yeah, it's making sense.
They have something very similar in that that corporation RPG that we looked at. They have these big AIs that...
Oh, the Archons.
The Archons, yeah. Yeah, it's pretty interesting. I wouldn't say benevolent, more benign, I think, is a better word for it, because all they do is they gamble on people, on human action. For, but they do the same kind of thing. They run the web, and I believe that they run the banking system as well.
Another type of currency could be time.
Oh, is like that Justin Timberlake movie?
Yeah, Time In.
Time In!
What did I say? Did I say Time In?
Yeah, you said Time In.
Oh, In Time.
That's why Chris made fun of you.
So there, people can bank time. And borrow time and lend time.
Mm-hmm.
Add interest.
Add interest, yeah. How would you do the interest there? You'd borrow a little time here.
No, I was thinking
how
like...
How pay that back? Yeah, I'll give you like from 80 to 90. Just give me a...
yeah, right.
Just give me a 22.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was thinking that too.
Yeah, I'm going to go see that over the weekend. I'll tell you how it is.
You know what? You may want your time back after watching that movie.
Ba-dum-bum. Nice, nice.
Yeah.
What's nicer without the ba-dum-bum? Call attention to the bad joke.
You know, when you get a refund, and I think we're getting away from banking a bit, but you go get a refund, they'll give you your money back, but they don't give you that time that you spent, that 90 minutes or 2 hours. What if they could do that?
Yeah.
Actually, I think that's kind of what they're hoping, that you'll just say, it's not worth my time, and let them keep
it. Yeah, I don't want to spend another 10 minutes getting my money back.
Right.
Yeah.
How you would do time?
I think you would have to mix it with another currency. You'd have to, I guess you would buy time more than borrow time.
Huh. Well, what if you did kind of one of those like those short loan kind of things? You know, the idea that you are borrowing this time now, and within a very short amount of time, you're going to have to pay it back. You know, so not like a mortgage where you could pay it off in the long term, but it's almost kind of one of those, you know, those get cash now kind of things, except it's with time.
Advanced paycheck kind of things?
Yeah, kind of like an advanced paycheck. Or it's like, okay, you got a day here, and you're going to have to pay it back by the end of the month with maybe like an hour tacked on.
Maybe it'd be like almost like an indentured servant, whereas you're borrowing time, but you're going to have to at some point, like you've borrowed a year time, but you'll have to pay them back at some point in your life, a year. Like you'll have to devote a year serving them somehow.
That's the way that I was thinking with it before was something, I don't know, I thought kind of a Matrix like simulation where the people have to work, or they're held in some kind of pods powering a machine or what have you, but they're paid in time, and the time is off of this machine or farm or whatever it is to be out in the real world, and then they have to go back and work for more of that time. The only other way that I thought of it working was maybe actually like you said, Lyle, about I'll take a year when I'm 20 for, you know, 5 years when I'm 90. Of course, to a person with a normal lifespan, that's fine. But say if you're a banker who's received lots of time, you're going to live to 160. So for you, 90 to 100, hey, that's fantastic.
Yeah, that'd be great for like somebody. Would that be somebody who's money for kind of like time for time's sake, because they just want to live longer. So they're borrowing all this money, and they're making all this deal and investing. People are depositing time, and then they're kind of reinvesting this time, like lending it to people and getting the compound interest, and their lifespan is increasing.
Yeah, yeah. And think about a banker who's, you know, just skimming a few minutes here and there, but he's lived for 1,000 years.
It's like Superman 3 when Richard Pryor, he's the hacker, and all he does is take like the cents that's everybody's paycheck.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I was thinking of Office Space, but okay.
Oh, that's where they got it from. Yeah. Because they're like, Superman 3. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. The reason I suggest it's sort of like the short time thing is because if you use it in the game, like what character is going to say, okay, so we had these awesome adventures, you know, when we were young, and yeah, I'm going to like have to pay off the time from when I'm 60 to when I'm 100. But you know what? We're not going to play that, so it doesn't really matter.
No, here's what you do.
Go ahead.
I think we're going to say this almost the same thing.
Yeah.
But it's kind of like when you look at the Juicer and Riffs, and they say, well, they got, a three-year lifespan.
That's where I was going to.
And you're like, oh, well, who cares? I'm not going to play a three-year camp. I'm not going to play Riffs for 3 years.
I'm getting off this as soon as possible.
Yeah.
Jeez.
Yeah. But you're like,
I want this time back.
But you play at the end of that 3 years. Mm. It's like, all right, cool. You're being a juicer. Yep. And look at my stats. Great. All right. You've got like 2 months to live.
What did I do for those other 2.5 years?
Oh, yeah. Right. Well, you had a great time. And that's
Can't
the same.
We play those?
Yeah, but you were talking, when we were talking about before the episode, you were talking about a game that encourages the players to go into debt. Now, they were talking about a regular money debt.
Oh, yeah.
But that was to increase or to give them some sort of connection to characters other than allies and mm-hmm. that, but connection to like a loan shark.
Yeah. It was the Tech Noir RPG, which looks like a really interesting system that I want to try out. And it's kind of like a futuristic hard-boiled detective story. And if you look at, I guess, like hard-boiled stories, usually, as Lila said, they're kind of like the characters are like a tarnished angel. And so kind of starting off in debt is kind of a good way to, I guess, represent that. Mm-hmm. And the idea in that game is you're given a small amount of money to buy stuff with your character, but you have contacts in the setting that you're playing in. And yeah, they provide different services for you that you can call on during character creation. And one of them is a shark. And a shark, when you hit them up, they will sort of give you more money mm-hmm. with the idea that, you know, you're going to have to pay it off again. But it's a way for your character to start off with this awesome stuff, or at least just kind of scrape by, but they're in debt, and now they owe someone something. And as Lyle said, it's kind of a connection that's not an ally. Mm-hmm. I mean, this person may kind of be your friend, and you can go see them to borrow more money during the game as you're playing it, but
it's going
to
cost you.
It's going to cost you, right? Like, you will have to pay this money back.
Yeah.
And
I think that is a good mechanic, because, like, when you look at an Elroy novel, L.A. Confidential, he's most famous, is the characters in that novel are on, like a train, but they can't get off. Mm-hmm. You know, that's the story. It's like circumstances are beyond their control. Mm-hmm. And that kind of sets that up in the game, is like circumstances are beyond your control. So getting back to the time thing is you're not playing borrowing this time. You're playing paying it back. And that's where you start.
Or avoiding paying it back.
Or avoiding paying it back, yeah.
That'd make a pretty good setup for like a campaign. Like, that would be something to bring the characters together. No, you're all kind of essentially criminals because you're dodging this time loan repayment, you know?
Wow, fun. If the loan shark catches up with you and it doesn't, it's not like it kills you or something, but you just start getting older and older as he gets closer.
Oh, that's kind of
creepy.
Kind of creepy. Or as I was thinking, I guess I kind of took a different approach to you guys. I imagined that the person
Could be built in. And you don't even have to have, the person doesn't even have to approach you. Mm-hmm. Maybe you're trying to stop it. It just clicks in at 80 and then suddenly your life starts dwindling rapidly.
That's kind of what I was thinking a little bit.
You're aging rapidly suddenly. So you have to try to stop it, and that's the adventure.
So in other words, you're a criminal because you have to stop this repayment that you already borrowed the money on.
And very frail.
If you want to take it to a really dark kind of direction, you know, use maybe mechanics similar to Vampire or something, you know, where you have to take life from other people or time from other people as it is.
Yeah, that's one way to kind of do it. I was thinking that the person wouldn't remember the time that was taken from them. Mm-hmm. So that'd be like a good way to set up like a mystery game, right? Like you've borrowed this time, you've borrowed like a month, say, right? And then the next month is just blank for you, right? Mm-hmm. You'd kind of wake up and...
That's like last episode. We were talking about reverse chronology.
Yeah.
So you have to...
That's probably why I thought of it, yeah.
Yeah.
Wow, that's a really good way of doing that.
Yeah. I kind of saw it as a way to...
Because that's like that AI. He lost a minute of time. And and for him, that was like millions or billions of actions that they've lost. Mm-hmm. For us, it's no big deal. But for them, it was just so much information. So they investigate like who killed them for that minute.
Yeah.
Or you kind of go the Demolition Man route. And the time you pay back is kind of spent in cryostasis, you know, where it kind of wouldn't really mean anything to you.
Jail time, you mean?
Or just like, I don't know what you could do. Like if you kind of like... I guess the person who gave you the
jail time.
You
just made that more spectacular.
Well, no, actually, I didn't even realize until then, but you know, that's kind of what we do. You know, people pay for crimes in time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, essentially.
There's also the, if you have like faster than light travel, and the idea is like say time passes on Earth, but you're like you travel the stars. Mm-hmm. So when you return to Earth, then your parents are dead.
Mm-hmm. That'd be a good use.
Okay, that didn't sound so spectacular.
Maybe your children.
Your children are dead. Parents are dead. And they were 80 when you left. Wow.
I haven't hit the speed of light yet.
Actually, it's only gone for a week. Earth time.
I think that would be another good setup for what to do with the time. Like, you know, you borrow the time and you have to pay it back. And so
it's a good way to, like, jump.
Back is, like, FTL. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, some people talk about if you're trying to, like, run a campaign that goes over, like, generations and how to do that. And you just jump, jump, jump. But, of course, you can say jump and then kind of fill in that whole 100 years between the jumps. But then, no, there is no 100 years. Yeah. You have to pay that.
Yeah, maybe that's the thing where the time is time that you have to be in and affect the real world. And, yeah. You know, that time you pay back, that's time that you're taking away. That would work really well in an eclipse phase where, you know, you spend time as an infomorph and the time you earn is time in a body.
It's more like an investor than a banker, although a lot of times that overlaps. Mm-hmm. But they see, they're looking at times which would be most beneficial.
Yeah.
So they don't want to live every day or every year. They're looking at the times that are both going to benefit them.
Yeah.
So they're almost like a future speculator.
Like, I see that Europe and Russia is going to go to war in 10 years, so we'll come back then.
Yeah.
That would actually be kind of cool, too. And then someone, like, imagine if that became, like, a trend. And, like, if everybody could kind of do it, and it's like, okay, well, you know.
These bankers start waking up, so you know something big's going to happen.
Well, no, I was thinking, like, people would kind of, you'd follow the stock market, right? And people would sort of analyze when, you know, the time to be out of stasis would be. And so, you know, people would kind of, like, buying up that
time. It's
like
currency trading. Like, when you do currency trading, there's, like, just times in the year that are good times to, like, you know, kind of bet on the currencies going up, or other times are good times to bet on currencies going down.
In summer, yeah.
Yeah, like when they do the employment data and they reveal that. So that's almost like either there's like times like people have speculated like you know, they're going to make an announcement here. This would be a great time to be alive.
Yeah.
You know, it's like I only wake up for Mardi Gras.
Lifetime shares.
Yeah.
Kind of thing.
Yeah. So
adds a new buzz to the word timeshare.
So you would give like, you know, like 350. It helps me talk. Stop making fun of my hands.
Lyle's gesturing is in front of Wayne's face.
Yeah, I'm kind of waiting to like lose an eye, you know?
But you give like you deposit or provide 350 days to a banker because you just want to be alive for the, you know, 2 weeks of the year.
Some kind of like mutual fund where they decide when a good time is going to be to bring people alive.
Yeah. Well, you were talking about vampires earlier, Wayne. That gets into our next currency.
Oh, which is blood.
Blood.
And bodies.
But, oh, and bodies. Okay.
Bodies. I guess
all right. That voice kind of threw me off.
I'm sorry.
So, yeah.
Yeah, I have the count.
And, Would you like to make a deposit?
One. But it's funny, he'll count everything, like just one, two, can you hurry up?
Three shares. I love it.
Yeah, so, I mean, they're obviously called blood banks. And I was actually interested in whether they actually kind of worked like a real bank. Turns out they don't, right? So I went to the Red Cross and I said, can I make a deposit in money, please?
That's the best thing I've heard all day.
But what I was wondering is, like, if you put in. Hear me out. Like, I'm going to go through it anyway.
He goes to get a mortgage, cutting his hand. Just let me know when you got enough for a deposit.
All right. You got enough? I'm getting kind of woozy. Man, this mortgage hurts.
Oh, thank you.
Sorry. No, what I meant is, like, if you donate blood to a blood bank, right, could you use that blood if you needed it without paying a doctor's fee? You know, like, maybe only the fee for the procedure, but would you then have to pay for, like, if you needed 3 pints of blood and you had put in 3 pints of blood last year, would you still have to pay for that blood? I don't know, but I don't think that's how it works, which is what I meant before your hilarity.
Sorry. Yeah, for vampires, that'd be pretty interesting because you could, of course, the vampires themselves, they don't have blood to use, but I can just see a person going with a deposit, you know, they're just kind of carrying some knocked out thug with them. Throw them on the desk.
But they could borrow blood from the blood bank, and then they would have to pay it back in interest, of course.
Or in favor.
Yeah, we can mix up the currencies, or in money. Hey, remember that?
No, I think that'd be pretty interesting. Yeah, as you said, like, you borrow. Wow. If that was part of the setting, then whatever faction controlled that blood bank would be pretty powerful if you had to pay it back in interest. Because when you think about it, vampires. You're essentially, that's essentially a food bank.
Yeah.
You know? She's like, okay, well.
Which is also not a, like a regular bank.
Which, I realize that. Like, I didn't try and deposit a sandwich, all right? I didn't go to a bank and say, here's this Subway. Can I put it in and then take it out
sir,
with
you
interest
actually,
later?
Sir, you actually donated that food. You didn't deposit. Oh, I can't have that can of peas back?
Like interest on the sandwich.
Yeah, it doesn't have to be the same can of peas. I just
would can I get some interest on that? Well, so the can of peas and filling out a corn
withdrawal slip.
Teller fee, it's a cracker.
I just. Oh, that was pretty good. I'm just gonna slap down my ATM card. Yeah, I want some peas. Excuse me, but I'm glad I could give you so much joy in my poorly phrased thing.
It's like a food bank, but
you
kind of not.
Right, but I was thinking you'd have to pay it back with interest, right? So
yeah, but a food bank's like a charitable organization.
I know. I'm talking about the vampires and the blood thing.
Yeah. It's kind of tough because the vampires, they don't need the bank, but it would be a definitely very useful resource for them.
It's kind of like, yeah, people walking around with all this money sticking out of their... It's not even like stealing. I guess it's like stealing.
In a sense,
I guess if you tried to... If you look at True Blood and they're trying to make the vampires more human... Mm-hmm. You know, of course, they have that the blood substitute, True Blood.
Yeah.
But if you don't have that in the world, I guess like this bank, like a blood bank acting as a bank for vampires could stop them from assaulting humans and stealing their blood.
In the Vampire Requiem video game, they had a blood bank there. I mean, like a regular standard definition of a blood bank, but they loaned out two vampires. And they actually was a loan thing. You had to go and do missions for them, so...
Yeah, I was thinking, like, if you did that, it couldn't just be kind of like a quote-unquote standard vampire setting with, as you said, people just walking around with lots of money in them, essentially.
Yeah.
I was thinking of, no, this would be kind of like, almost kind of like what they were doing in the end of Blade, where they were, like, you know, kind of farming people.
Yeah.
In that, kind of, I saw it as that was the only option.
Yeah.
Right? And so, therefore, whatever faction controlled the blood bank would be incredibly powerful.
In that case, yeah, that would be.
But I could see it as like, oh, we have all these free humans running around, right? The market's going to destabilize, you know, get them back in.
Yeah, I thought of when you mentioned that with body banks specifically, the thing that came to mind for that was the collection agency for a body bank. I think would be pretty cool. If you, for example, take out the goons that are coming after you, but then they come back later and they've got new arms and new legs and stuff.
So, or like Repo Man, where they take back
I've
the things.
I've never seen Repo Man, but...
Yeah, take back what you took.
Mm.
Mm. They come and recollect. Yeah, it kind of, again, made me think of Eclipse Phase, because they actually have body banks in that setting where, since you can just, like, you know, transport your consciousness, like, when you travel, if you transport your consciousness, you can set something up with body banks so that your morph just stays on ice, and then if you plan on coming back, it's kind of like, it's almost like a pet hotel kind of thing. So, except it is a bit more like a bank because your body could be used by other people while you're away, so the body bank could essentially,
I
guess, rent out your body.
Yeah,
or they also said you could, you know, if you plan on not coming back, you could sort of trade in this morph for credit to then use somewhere else to get a new body, or kind of like buying a new car. If you don't have enough cash or a lot of cash, you can specifically request like damaged models or... Yeah.
It's like we said with the cybernetics episode a while back, you know, that there's the banks who loan out, say, this arm stuff. It's your arm, but it doesn't belong to you. It belongs to the banks. So
until you pay it off, and they can always repossess it.
Yeah.
Oh, that reminds me of a Firefly episode.
That'd be cool characters to play, Repo Man, to repossess things.
It'd be a pretty dirty campaign, because like if you caught somebody, you'd have to take their arm off. So it might be a bit gruesome, but...
Hmm. Well, yeah. I
suppose you could make it clean if it's just machinery. Just
I was thinking like a socket thing, you know?
Yeah.
That'd be if it's not, if it's like a vat-grown arm, you know, like that could be in a very expensive treatment. Like you could get like a cybernetic, which would be very cheap.
Yeah.
Cybernetic replacement is very cheap, but let's say like an organic replacement is very expensive.
Mm-hmm.
So the person has to borrow money to get it. And then, well... cut it off.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah, there was that Firefly episode.
Which one was that?
I think it was towards the last one, where the guy was essentially transporting organs.
Oh, I remember that. Yeah. Yeah, good episode of that.
Yeah. Kind of do something like that. Oh, well, you know, you defaulted on all these things.
You were talking about memories before, Chris.
Yeah, actually, I had this odd memory of... Yeah, right. I thought it was Thundercats, but it actually turned out to be Silverhawks when I researched it. And there was a guy named Zero. He was a memory thief. And I just remember seeing the episode a long time ago, and it just sparked my interest. Some guy would go around taking people's memories for it. But yeah. That came to the idea of a memory bank, especially with something like Eclipse Phase, where people have an infinite kind of lifespan, but their brains might not be able to hold all of the information, so you have to store it somewhere. Or something like in the movie Strange Days, where you can buy other people's memories to experience them yourself.
Mm-hmm.
So, I thought that would be a pretty cool idea.
I was actually thinking Harry Potter, too.
Oh, like with I can't remember the name of that weird thing.
It was really more just like a storage thing, but you could take out memories and store them and then
sort of view
them later, yeah.
But I thought that would be pretty cool, especially if maybe your character, you played the characters where you didn't have your memories and you had to go to the bank and get them. So you could kind of, depending on how much of the memories you had available, you could kind of build your character.
I could see that as kind of an interesting way to, sorry to cut you off. I could see that as an interesting way to play the same character in a different way. Because, like, futuristic games have the idea of, like, skill softs or, think of The Matrix. They just uploaded sort of knowledge skills into their head, or even kind of, like, muscle memory skills, where you could have the same character, but your skills and knowledge could change after a couple sessions of the game because you went to the memory bank, right? Mm-hmm. So you actually know how to do all these things or all this information. It's just too much for your brain, so you kind of store it in the memory bank. And then you're like, okay, well, we're planning, this heist job, which means I'm going to need this set of skills. So I'll go to the memory bank and take them out.
Well, it's almost like buying memories.
I guess rental memories.
Rental memories, that'd be cool. Or depositing memories, and then the bank can kind of invest them and loan them out to other people because then people start to get the same memories.
Oh, how about this?
So whose memories are they? And you start to lose track of who you are.
Yeah.
Because if people have the same memories, it's almost like one of those doppelganger
problems. Yeah, it's a really popular memory that somebody has, skydiving or something. Yeah. And everyone has that experience.
Yeah, whose memory is it?
Yeah. It'd be pretty cool.
Yeah. I was thinking of a way to get kind of interest on it is that if it's kind of a skill or a memory that can be improved upon, such as, I'm drawing a blank, but, the person kind of renting that skill or borrowing that skill, their experiences would enhance it, and then they give it back to the bank, and then the bank has gotten some kind of return on their investment because now they can charge more for the next person who wants to experience that or use that skill.
I think you did it pretty well in Changeling, too, where I think one of the barters that we had to give away was, the memory of our first kiss.
Well, that was a bit...
Was that yours?
Yeah, that was mine. That was Changeling. And I was thinking that, even though that... it was kind of a stretch to call it a bank.
Well, I agree.
It was using memories as a currency.
Exactly, yeah.
Right.
And I could see that as being the interest, Sure, I'll give you the bank manager's plan, his memory of the layout of the bank, but, you're going to have to give me, the memory of how you built this thing.
Yeah, I just kind of did that to kind of try and sort of create that kind of weird feeling about, everything and anything is currency here, and how do you pay these weird costs, or kind of what are you willing to give away?
Memory, again, this is kind of tough in a game, though, because who cares about memories of your first kiss? Because it's not really a memory of a first kiss.
Yeah.
Because your character probably didn't experience that.
Mm.
But if you start to apply, the roles we talked about, like the destroyer using memories to, or accumulating memories and doing it for somehow to destroy things.
Yeah, if somebody had access to your memories, a good share of your memories, imagine what couldn't they do?
Or they have access to them and you don't.
Yeah.
So they can go back and then when you get them back, they've altered things.
Ooh, that's even better.
Yeah. Or the controller, then they want the memories because that's a way to control people because then they would know more about their motivations. And of course, people want them back. So you could say, well, you've lost the memory of your first kiss or whatever, or you've lost all memories of your childhood.
Mm-hmm.
How does that affect you? But I mean, people can understand you would really want them back.
Yeah.
So if you want them back, you've got to do what the controller says.
I think you kind of said it, Lau, but I was thinking of, that kind of like weird payment in Changeling. Like, yeah, it doesn't really mean anything if the character gives up these memories that don't really mean anything to the player. I always saw it as, like, now that the other person has these memories, what are they going to do with them to kind of make the character's life difficult? That was always kind of my end goal in doing that, such as turning the person who borrowed those things into the controller or the destroyer, as you suggested, and sort of that was the I guess that was the price that the character or the player had to play, kind of give these things away that then will make their lives difficult because someone else can use them and kind of mess with the character now.
Like, but then you start to lose your identity. I mean, of course, World of Darkness has a really good mechanic for that, where you can lose your, I guess, I do prefer the...
humanity.
The vampire term.
Yeah, that's the best one.
And like, the more you sell, the more you get, or the more you deposit, or more you give away. But you're endangering your own humanity. And I think that, like, in Changeling, where memories are a currency, I think that's the way to do it, is you just become less and less human. Mm-hmm. Because what makes us human, what makes us who we are, is our memories.
Yeah.
And if somebody else is controlling that. I think maybe an easier one is kind of similar to favors, but information currency.
Mm-hmm.
So we could see, I mean, it's very easy to see that exchange. Somebody collects all the information.
Yeah.
You would like to withdraw some, but what they're going to require, it is like a two-step adventure, because you probably withdrawing the information to achieve whatever goal in that particular adventure you're doing now,
mm-hmm.
but then you're going to have to go back and then provide them the information that they want.
Yeah, I think that's a pretty common trope in a lot of movies mm-hmm. and stories. Is, you know, there's this guy that you know who you go to get the information, mm-hmm. and you have to provide him with information as well.
Yeah, I thought along those lines too. Although, kind of as you guys said, with the reputation economy for Eclipse Phase, I was always kind of stumped as to what to charge as interest.
Yeah.
You know, especially kind of in a game when you're talking about information, because how do you decide what how much the information is worth?
Mm-hmm.
So I guess that can be kind of tricky. Plus, if it's not really something you can just sort of make up on the fly as a GM, but
it's supply and demand.
Hmm.
Yeah.
You could have a fluctuating system. Yeah.
Well, we just got this for you, and now you're telling us it's worthless? Sorry, that's the way it goes.
Yeah.
I'm ruined! all this information in my head! Oh, it's ruined!
Memories of first kisses aren't worth what they used to be.
Inflation.
It's like a wheelbarrow of memories. Buy a loaf of bread.
That's pretty funny. I imagine this now line of people with empty wheelbarrows outside of like an idea bank or something. It's just like, gotta trade in all these ideas.
Well, let's move on to mechanic. Oh, are we done with bankers?
Ha! Almost as good as a blood bank.
Oh, all right.
One was intentional.
Yes. Oh, fantastic.
Well, we were looking at mechanics in different games like GURPS and World of Darkness, Corporation.
Mm-hmm.
One thing I liked in Corporation was the expense account.
Mm-hmm.
And that goes back into the Eurasian Corporation, where that was one of the things that they get that the other corporations don't get.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea is like the accountants in the corporation catch 90% of the violations to the expense account.
Mm-hmm.
But, of course, there's that 10%. And the idea is like you try to justify different charges to the company account.
Yeah.
Like, I need, you know, this new suit because I need this car.
Yeah.
They use an example as it'd be tough to justify why the entire party needed new suits, a new car, and new weapons for a stakeout.
Mm-hmm.
But it adds like an element of negotiation
yeah.
to a game that might not be there otherwise. A lot of times you just flip the rule book open to the equipment list.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you might have some negotiation on price, but I thought the expense account added another level where you would like that kind of a justification. And there's always like somebody could catch it.
Yeah.
You know, comes back with interest.
I would really want to role play that kind of expense account finagling, because I don't know, like I think it would be kind of boring if it was just like a die roll, right?
Yeah.
And you had like a 10% chance of, oh, they caught you this time. Like, you could do that, but I think it would be kind of, you know, boring a little bit.
Yeah.
Well, I think you could do that. You could take the randomality where it gets noticed, and then when it gets noticed, then you have to...
Sorry, I don't think you did the die roll.
No.
That's not part of their system. Their system is it's a negotiation between you and the game master.
Yeah.
They just happen to say that it's part of the flavor, 90%.
Right. No, I understood that. But yeah, what I was saying is like some people might potentially just say, okay, roll a die, you know, and you made it.
And that's looking at GURPS and looking at like their finance skills.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, you just roll a die. And of course, I'm sure that there's like role playing behind there to see how well you do. But just think of kind of the extra ideas you could do there. If you want to ruin somebody,
mm-hmm.
use the finance skill. I think World of Darkness is quite flexible because you can tack on. It's very easy to add new skills to that system.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Let's say it's intelligence plus and you add a finance skill,
mm-hmm.
and it wouldn't unbalance the system. But what can you do with the finance skill? One thing could be to be the destroyer,
yeah.
and you're able to use finances to ruin people. You know how to do it. You could use a finance skill or even the resource merit, whichever.
Well, that's what I was going to say. I think World of Darkness specifically is really good because it has that resource merit.
That's good for buying things, but if you want to take it to the next level.
I think, though, because the resource can be bought in dots, and you can buy as many dots as you can, and that's how the rest, that's how the skills and that's how the stats all work together is in dots. Yeah. I mean, why not, instead of combining your dots of finance with, say, your smart skill, how about add together your resource dots plus that?
I was thinking of that. But like, it can also add as a substitute, like, for example, investigation. Mm-hmm. But, you know, people have a credit wake when they start using a credit card. Yeah. Of course, the more advanced your system is or more advanced your setting is, the more chance that they're going to be using some sort of credit card system.
Yeah.
So then you can actually just track people using a credit card wake.
Hmm. Yeah, I thought of applying the dots and resources as well to kind of either ruin someone or to try and
The only reason I didn't them. Initially suggest that because I think that may unbalance it a bit because the resource is set up as a very specific thing. It's your disposable income as a merit. So merits are cheaper than skills.
That's true.
But if you were to, I'm just saying World of Darkness is quite easy to add a new skill to it. Mm-hmm. But of course, if you wanted to, you could use the resource merit and then perhaps use it on its own or perhaps adding it to a particular ability like intelligence.
Yeah.
But it is cheaper to buy a merit than it is cheap than to buy a skill.
The reason I like that, and also Fate as well, or sorry, Fate, Dresden Files has a resource skill that's weighted with the same as the other skills. But one of the reasons I like that is because if you're talking about bankers, you're talking about people who can have enormous, vast sums of money or whatever the currency in your campaign may be. And to have that represented with an actual number, that's a lot of bookkeeping for the GM to do. Whereas if it's represented as a skill, I think it's a lot more easy to conceptualize what kind of forces they can bring to bear against you.
I guess so. I was just thinking, but at least in the World of Darkness, like resource represents your disposable income, as Lyle said. And like, just because you have a lot of disposable income doesn't mean you know how to use it, right? Or to get it. So I kind of saw it as someone who has a lot of money. That doesn't mean they're good at banking. It just means maybe somebody left them a trust fund.
Their father was very good at banking.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I was thinking. And I guess Lyle brings up a good point with the mechanics thing. But I do like the idea of kind of making it a skill because, I mean, you could have like really poor bankers, right, who are good at finding money trails or data trails or whatever trails that these resources are leaving, but they themselves are not personally rich, right? Mm-hmm. But on the other hand, you could have, you know, some millionaire who has no ability in that whatsoever.
Yeah.
But I like the idea of making it a skill.
Well, I mean, and really the idea is if you wanted to play a banker either as an NPC or as a player character, like there's a lot that you can do with it other than be rich or have a lot of status, have a lot of goons. Mm-hmm. If you have somebody who made their own money, so they know how the ins and outs of the financial system, there's things that they could do to their opponents more than just sending a kill squad after them.
Mm-hmm. If you do like a fantasy game, or if you have like, you know, the classic kind of roving band of murder hobos, as I've heard them called before, right? That's essentially what adventurers are, let's face it. Murder hobos, right? But if you kind of have that sort of centralized bank idea, like we brought up with the dragons example, or kind of anything like that, so long as the news traveled faster, I mean, you could have like want ads.
Those huge conspiracy theories are that everyone's going to get this ID card with an RF chip in it, and that RF chip is going to link to your bank accounts and to all your personal information. And the idea is that if you make too much trouble for the government or the evil conspiracy group, that they'll just shut off your ID, your chip, and then you have no person, you have no credit, you have no money.
Yeah, people can choose to go off the grid, or you can be forced off the grid. Yeah. And either way, that would be pretty interesting to try to, if you're trying to live off the grid in a sufficiently modern setting. Mm-hmm. I mean, like don't hand wave a lot of that.
Yeah.
Like, no, you can't stay anywhere.
Yeah.
Yeah, they'll want to see something, and as soon as they, you know,
a lot of car dealerships nowadays, they won't accept cash. You have to use credit.
We're also talking about the Robin Hood characters, where sometimes they just give money to like the town. The town's failing, so they go kill the dragon, the non-banker dragon, and give them 1,000,000 gold coins. And you're like, you know, I'm a paladin, so what I do is I just give it to the temple. How much more interesting would it be if that temple was like a Templar temple? So they actually do some things with the money, or if they're more like a microfinancing and they're giving the money to the small amounts of money to the farmer so that they do something. Mm-hmm. Or perhaps they're even just trying to invest the money so they'll expect to see some return, or it gives them a connection to that town, or whatever they're doing is because then maybe they're profit sharing now, which I hear is one of the ways like Islamic banking is trying to get around the usury thing. Mm-hmm. Which is against the Quran or something. So one of the things is that they kind of enter in, it's not like they're loaning, they're more like investing in that person.
Like partners.
Yeah, they become partners.
They share the risk equally.
Yeah.
And when you said kind of the investing thing, that made me think of the board game Warrior Knights. and how sometimes you have the option of like investing in expeditions, and sometimes you get your money back, sometimes you get like two or three times back. And I think that would be kind of an interesting way to use money in a game session. Like, yeah, you just dumped 1,000,000 gold coins on the party. What are they going to do? Okay, turn it into gems and hoard it. Well, it would be more interesting if they actually invested in the town or invested in something. And then, you know, you send things to threaten the town, you know, and then they actually have... they have a good motivation, or that's a good hook to keep them like interested in adventure, because they're going to protect their investments.
Looks like you're looking for words.
Yes, I'm looking for many words, yeah.
Two things. One, it kind of reminded me, kind of made me think of a way that a banker can mess up with that party, and is that when they're shutting down all the places that they can deposit, you know, if they got like a 1,000,000 gold coins or 1,000 gold coins, that's very heavy. So what they do is buy kind of like, exchange it for magic items or
platinum pieces and
or
gems.
Platinum pieces or gems or something more portable, but they're like, no, you can't.
What am I going to do with all this change?
Yeah, exactly. what are you going to do with that? Yeah. Yeah, it's like you're stuck with like a bunch of pennies. The second thing is you can, if the person is involved in investing, it doesn't matter fantasy, modern or future, then this is more like an insider trader. But they, what their adventure could be, or an adventure could be, is manipulating the circumstances so their investment pays off.
Yeah.
So if they're, you know, if they're shorting a stock, they can take down that company or cause a problem so it goes down. Or if they're invested in another company, then they can take out a rival.
I was thinking the fantasy campaign, right? That sounds like a bunch of lawful evil characters to me, walking around door-to-door dragon insurance salesman. Do you have dragon insurance? No? Oh, well, would you like to buy some dragon insurance? All right, here you go, yeah. Oh, you didn't pay? And then I'm thinking of the, you know, they rile up the dragon, you know, to scare people who didn't buy.
See, actually, that's what I was thinking. Like, when you said that, I heard the opposite, that instead of the characters being the investors, that the party is invested in by some banker. And then,
yeah, I meant that too, yeah.
Yeah, you could go in a lot of different directions. You could have it be something where it's very it's completely nice and benevolent, that's the word, where he just wants these people to succeed. He's trying to get a return investment on them. Or you could have it like you suggested, Lyle, like insider trading. You know, this guy, maybe the PCs don't even know. This guy, he's shorted a stock on a company and he says, you know, this company is really terrible. You should do something about it to earn a profit.
Yeah, there's also, it could lead to some dilemmas for the party in that money is, I guess, a means to an end, but or a little bit more is it. There might be a case where, do you drag all that treasure out, or do you go finish the adventure because you don't want to be weighed down? But if you've got somebody who's invested literally in the party and they're expecting a return, then you're like, wow, we kind of have to pay this guy off because we're indebted to them. Yeah. It is like a job, but more exciting than that sounds.
So, what? Wait a minute.
Today was bankers, investments, and jobs. All right.
Yeah, wait a minute. I thought it was fantasy role playing. What?
We had some insurance sales.
Yeah. Don't forget the blood bank.
Timeshares, yeah.
So, just to wrap up the episode and to kind of tie it back to the Occupy Wall Street that we had at the beginning that was kind of muddled.
/canceled by me.
Yeah. I believe the word you're looking for is aborted.
Oh, great. And now you're going to abort this one. Great. Thanks, guys. All right. Well, thanks for investing some time in this.
Wow. You're not going to be able to get through that without laughing, are you?
Whatever. All right. So this was Creature Features Bankers, and it was a way of using bankers and different currencies in your game to hopefully make them, don't want to say interesting.
Looks like bankers creatures. Let's not say that they're boring.
Yeah, well, it looks like you didn't invest in that thesaurus, did you?
I guess I didn't. To make it more fun.
Cool. Thanks for joining us again on Idle Red Hands. Check us out online, www.idleredhands.com, idleredhands.com. You can listen to the episodes right there on the website, through Stitcher, through iTunes, or through DriveThruRPG. Send us an email, post on the website, in our forums, or any way you can get a hold of us. We'd love hearing from everybody. And be sure to follow us on Twitter. So we'll see you next time.
Thanks.
Bye. All right. Thanks for investing.
Okay. Hey.
Yeah. All right. High five.
Oh, thanks. I'll take that. Here's six back.
Oh, it's a shame this is going to get cut.
Drive-through RPG. We average 9 new titles a day. That's over 60 a week. And we've got well over 15,000 RPG titles online right now. Drive-through RPG, the one true source for RPGs.
Idle Red Hands, recorded in Kobe, Japan. See us online at www.idleredhands.com. Music provided by Tripod Jimmy, and the song was Roadkill. Hope you enjoyed it. See you next time.